Hello, this is the Film Experience Podcast. I'm not Nathaniel Rogers, but I'm pinch hitting for the host himself, who is coughing away over his house. But I'm Katie Rich, and I'm here with Nick Davis.
Hey, I like
And
your house, Katie.
thanks, it's so nice you guys came over. I'm sorry I didn't get dressed. And Joe Reed.
Hi, I'm putting up with your cat.
Oh, you love the cat.
And I am her too. I will
Yes.
try not to cough into the microphone.
Yeah, Nathaniel was injured in the line of duty trying to see Steve Jobs yesterday, which I guess we'll talk about at some point later on once you've been able to see it. But we did all successfully see The Martian at many of us, at least, at a different film festival called Toronto that may or may not be run better by the one that's going on.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? But I've been talking a lot, so I'm going to make someone else kick off and talk about The Martian. Maybe Joe. He just spoke up.
I did. Oh man, did I volunteer myself? Okay, I really liked it. I think seeing a movie like that at the tail end of the summer was the best idea. It sort of plays as this kind of like refreshing tonic after a lot of summer movies tend to be sort of like overblown and sort of like loud and aggressive and violent and all these sort of things, and in many ways dissatisfying along those lines. And I think The Martian felt very sort of clean and streamlined, and knew that it was going to get by on force of personality and sort of I don't know if it felt like it wasn't going to rely on any kind of big sort of big blockbuster bells and whistles to get you. It felt like, I mean, this is not a complex story. It's not like it's, this isn't the eating your vegetables of blockbuster filmmaking. It's very, very simple. It's very, Matt Damon is stranded on Mars, and the people on the ground have to get him back, and they've it was a lot more of the other non-Matt Damon characters than I was expecting. I think I was kind of expecting a sort of, one man show with occasional sort of like ducks back into the control room. But there was a lot of, we got a lot of the stuff from the people at NASA trying to, figure out a way. I think that was the nice little parallel, as Matt Damon's trying to like MacGyver his way through survival on Mars. And as impressive as that was for that character, I think the movie also doesn't want you to lose sight of the fact that like it was, taking a village to rescue that one astronaut.
It felt like it was praising teamwork,
Yeah.
which I was not at all expected, given I thought it was going to be more like Castaway.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not actually that common in Hollywood blockbusters that like cooperation is heroic.
Yeah.
Yeah, cooperation and cooperation through knowledge. Like a bunch of people who had, it wasn't like some crazy, like an Armageddon where they're bringing in a bunch of know-nothing oil rig guys to solve the problem. It's a bunch of highly trained scientists who know exactly what they're doing, and it's really in favor of science and math. I mean, it's not like overly technical, which I think the book is, which is a really good thing they do in their favor. But it's that confidence, and like what you were talking about, Joe, before, like they're making the movie that they're making. It's pretty bare bones, but they know it's going to be entertaining, and that sense of mastery, and not coming from Ridley Scott, who has made a lot of movies that didn't feel confident like that at all in recent years. But whatever the combination they put together, it's just really enjoyable to be in good hands like that.
And not to get too spoilery, and if you want to put your hands over your ears for 10 seconds or whatever, I'm not going to give it away anything too specific, but like there's a degree to which a movie like this feels like it's leading towards this like big moment of sacrifice from one character or another. I don't even know if I was expecting one specific one, but normally you feel like these space movies, I always feel like it's that, Clooney in Gravity, where he's just like, "You'll be fine," and he like floats away, and it's just like on his heroic sacrifice, she will find the courage to go on and that kind of thing.
I was wondering that too. Like, is Sebastian Stan just not a big enough star that he has to sacrifice himself for Matt Damon
He
so
was
he
exactly the one I was thinking was gonna end up going.
can?
Like, no, you go, and like you take my oxygen, and he floats
The
away.
handsome young anonymous guy, he just is goner.
At which I would cry in the audience, and it would
Well, and also, isn't he the one at the very beginning of the movie that is like, no, he died, we have to go? So it's sort of like, it could easily, in a lesser movie, be like, it was your fault.
Right.
Well, and so you have to make this
noble
like,
sacrifice.
And Chastain was sort of building up to something like that, too. And, like, just, I mean, suffice it to say, the movie does not go in the expected directions that way. So.
Yeah.
Nick, did you fall for this movie the same as the rest of us did?
Maybe not as much, but I liked it okay. Like, I saw Everest and The Martian and The Walk now, like, three nights out of four. In and so there's been a lot of, like, I put myself in this really dangerous situation, and then it got really dangerous, which was crazy. Like, and, like, I guess there wasn't... Like, The Martian to me is one of those things that all the things that you guys are saying that make it unique to its genre and unique within Ridley Scott's, you know, such a departure from all the self-seriousness he's been showing us for the last few years, not so adroitly. Like, I was intrigued by its lightness and its tone, but there was a sense in which I felt like I was watching the Daily Show staffers have to go get John Oliver or something. Like, it was just so... kind of, like, from the minute Matt Damon wakes up and realizes his plight, he's, like, already kind of jocular about it, you know?
Well, I think that they do, so something that the book doesn't do that this does, I think that works really well, is they have that scene where he's kind of doing surgery on himself at the very yeah. beginning, and so he's really scared, and it's really dramatic in that one scene. And then at the end of it, he just screams, fuck, which kind of is the first big joke of the movie that kind of...
Yeah.
But it puts you in... Because you think you would do the exact same thing. Like, even if you were scared to death, that's probably what your reaction would be, and you might get a laugh out of yourself. Like, it,
yeah.
it balances that and kind of doesn't let you forget the stakes, even though it is really jocular, like you were saying.
Maybe it's because of... Damon's press tour of late, but it also has this really weird, like, I'm a cool bro, like, aren't I charming thing to it, that it is really charming up to a point, and then you're like, dude, don't you feel anything about the situation?
Right.
Like, I kept waiting for, like, him to really break down in some scene. I really liked the movie. It's really fun. But sometimes it didn't really feel, like, dangerous to me in the way that a survival story, I think, might, if it wanted to be really resonant.
I did not feel worried for him. I totally agree. And not just because this is not the kind of movie that, even if it's setting up, like Joe was saying, one of these supporting characters may have to be the sacrificial lamb. Like, we know here on October 2nd, the studio is not going to kill off Matt Damon, probably. But even just moment to moment, I was like, this doesn't feel that dangerous. This is, like, you know... Home Alone on Mars. All this science happening.
I don't know if I felt that way, actually. I thought the, even if Damon's performance feels slightly more unflappable, the circumstances around it seemed, I mean, I think the point where you sort of cut back to him and he's lost all that weight and he looks all, you know, the ravages of time have really sort of gotten at him, and I thought those circumstances really kind of bring it home. The
bring him home.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, yeah. Are you guys being paid by the studio?
Yes, I'm actually being paid by the studio.
Do not talk about it without the hashtag, okay?
How do you think I afforded these fancy potatoes?
Yeah. Even though I think I... You know, I agree with you guys on some of the shallowness aspects of it. I think its bigness and confidence really lured me in after, like Joe was saying, like a summer of seeing movies that seemed to be kind of like working so, so hard to give you that same feeling of lightness and energy that this movie has. Like, I mean, I'm, you know, the great defender of Avatar on this planet at this point, probably. So a confident blockbuster goes a long way with me. And it feels, I mean, and like, I think the script from Drew Goddard does a really good job of a lot of that. And like, Ridley Scott, like, who knew he had anything this pleasurable in him at this point?
Mm-hmm. I interviewed him this week, Ridley Scott. And it was funny because to me, it's his funniest film. And I brought up
funnier,
like,
than Robin Hood?
And I brought up that I thought, you know, I was like, I have to say it was really unexpected because it's, the tone is so fun and light. And it just, it's not what people associate with you. And then he was weirdly, like, defensive about it. Like, some of my movies are funny. Like,
what?
I'm like, are they?
Yeah, what are, a good year? Is that what we're thinking of?
Like, I get just,
he brought up a good year. He brought up Matchstick Men.
Matchstick Men's actually decently funny. But it's not the, it's not, I don't know.
So you guys think Matt Damon's going to get an Oscar for it? Bring it back to our usual topics of conversation. Or an Oscar nomination for it.
I was going to say, a nomination seems within the realm of possibility, yeah, depending on how the rest of it shakes out.
It seems like the Oscar crowd would be more excited if he were more overtly suffering or occupying a tone that felt more despondent, even if it's not to the movie's advantage or would be more predictable. But
yeah, I mean, that's my only hesitation with him. I currently have him predicted.
Wow, I didn't realize he was even being seen in this way.
But the only reason I'm really predicting that is seems a little thin right now, and also it's a really charming performance, and since it's going to be a massive hit, that can help in those situations.
Yeah. Is it going to be a massive hit?
I think it already
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Already, okay. Even through like Thursday night and Friday numbers, it was pretty big.
Wow. Okay.
Forecast, can The Martian top Gravity's October record is the headline.
That's not cool.
Sorry, man. All space movies, it's looking like a $53 million debut, according to The Hollywood Reporter. You know, this podcast is always talking about box office numbers.
Right, that's right.
In movies like The Martian, I think this is not the first time I have had to sit there and realize that my will to live may be much less than other people's. Like, it's like, nope, I got shut down. Yeah. I'm not growing potatoes in my own shit. I died. That's what happened.
The very first sign that things are going that bad, like, it's cyanide pill time. That's it. I'm out.
Yeah.
That's me with zombie movies. I'm always like, yeah, I'd be munching on brains in no time.
Yep.
Well, thank God we have Matt Damon here to propagate the species.
Yes.
Or even just the several times over his career that we've been asked to understand that humanity would not stop at anything to rescue Matt Damon.
That's true.
All three times have been like...
What's the third one after this and Saving Private Ryan?
Interstellar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Although they kind of don't rescue him in that one.
Well, when he turns out to...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Right.
The scene where a lot of time has passed and he's, like, emaciated.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
I'm not fooled by stunt doubles anymore. Like, if when you have actors like Christian Bale and, like, Jake Gyllenhaal who will starve themselves to death for a part. So I'm just like, why are you even trying to fake me out? Just, like, I don't even have to think about whether or not he lost weight. I still understand that he's on Mars and that it's been tough for him, you know?
Yeah.
I just think after, like, Nightcrawler and, like, The Fighter and things like that, it's really hard to, like, take it seriously if the actors don't go there. Which is not a good thing, because, like, actors should take care of themselves. But
actors of Hollywood, starve yourselves for Nathaniel's pleasure, please.
That was such an odd scene, because it was so, I mean, I agree with you that it was weirdly ostentatious in a way of, like, we will now present the naked body of the actor. Like, in a way that it did feel a little... marked, but also the, like, I will now walk out of a shower. It's like, you took, wait, a shower? I mean, I bet it was a weird shower, but I...
And didn't he also say he hadn't showered in a year?
Was it a shower like he later? Was walking out of?
I mean, he's walking out with a towel around his shoulders and, like, rubbing his seemingly wet hair.
Hmm.
He was just disco dancing, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
To all that disco music.
Yeah, I wish they would have used that more.
Someone on Twitter was making the argument that the movie feels homophobic because of the hate of disco.
That's a stretch. All right. I don't know. I feel.
Thank you, authoritative voices. I need someone else to weigh in on this.
I think that's a stretch, too. And I think it's just, the only reason Nina B would even think that is the recent, like, kerfuffles.
The unpleasantness. Yeah.
The troubles. The Matt Damon troubles.
I just felt like, bitch, you could have found out that she was a Bon Iver fan. You are lucky. Like, go with this disco.
Well, from what I understand, that's from the book, and apparently it was like a lot heavier in the book. Basically,
everything is more obnoxious in the book.
It never occurred to me that this was based on a book. It doesn't have that tone at all.
Well, the book feels like a screenplay written in novel form. Like, it feels like
an okay. For that. I guess I should read more.
What are books?
Let's talk about Carol, you guys.
Yeah, but get us a drink.
Speaking of books.
Speaking of books. Carol. Nice. Carol's also based on a book.
Speaking of disco.
I want to, I feel
speaking of out of this world, am I right, guys?
There we go.
I feel like Nick should start this conversation because he did this amazing interview with Todd Haynes. So I feel like you are the leading expert on Carol in my book.
Yeah. But I'll pass out if I start thinking about it. It was so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this interview is lengthy and thoughtful and like,
it's great.
You keep saying things and he's like, yeah, that's exactly right. And it's like, oh my God, you've achieved interview Nirvana when you say something smart and the other person's like, yes, you understand my movie completely.
But Film Comment hooked me up with a screening like a couple weeks before Toronto and it was only for me. So I was sitting in a theater by myself watching Carol. Already feels like the movie they made just for me. But I think all of us probably felt like, oh my God, they made this just for me. Like, it's so yeah.
Yeah.
I can't say enough about how much I love it.
The only movie of his I don't like was the previous one.
I'm not there.
No, Mildred Pierce?
Yeah.
Oh, Mildred Pierce.
And I also wasn't a big fan of Mildred Pierce, so like he's one of my all-time favorite filmmakers, but the last two projects I've been kind of like, eh. Like for me, it was like a big deal that it rekindled the love, and it wasn't even like an issue. Like I was going to ask you guys when you first knew that you were in love with it, and I'm trying to remember... when that happened for me. I think I think it was the scene when they're, you know, surreptitiously watching Sunset Boulevard through the projection window.
Yeah, I can see that being your trigger for sure.
No, so that scene
it's
involves
a total trigger for me.
That scene involves a bunch of tertiary characters to the film. I'm trying to figure out why that was what did it for you.
It was because he's so great at doing really complicated things like giving you information on how to read his movie without getting in the way of his movie. In lesser hands, that character, the New York Times guy who was the projectionist, you know, and he's writing notes about Sunset Boulevard because he wants to become a writer, you know, and he's talking about like, I'm recording everything that people, every time that people say something, but they mean something else. Which is
funny in relationship to Sunset Boulevard of all movies, because like that bitch is saying what she means, but
like, especially that New Year's Eve sequence. But
exactly,
like, so yeah, it was a strange thing, but it was like the idea of like in lesser hands that character, because later he has a speech about people being drawn to each other and not being able to explain why, like pinging off each other like satellites. So like every single time he showed up, he imparted something that was crucial about understanding what you're watching, and yet he didn't feel like a construct to me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It felt like an actual, like, this person is part of this world that they, like, he's such a brilliant director, maybe because he doesn't ever rely on totally one thing. Like, you can say that's a screenplay device, but on the other hand, so much of what he's telling you is image-based that he's firing on all cylinders, basically.
Yeah. My moment was so much earlier when all the employees of the store, was it Macy's?
No.
When they're handing out those Santa hats and
yes,
the guards say over and over again, compliments of the company, you know, compliments of the company.
Yes.
And it's so setting up a kind of miserable factory-like existence in the place. But then that hat, which they could have made just be this little chintzy, like, made-for-2-cents, like, bright, tacky red thing, is like this rich, kind of beautiful, burgundy hat in the context of the whole shot, which is technically they have decorated the store for Christmas and it is kind of red and green, but it is the palest, saddest red and green imaginable. Mm-hmm. And the hat's the most beautiful thing in the whole image. And it's the thing that's supposed to represent how kind of miserable and controlled she is. And I was like, how do you do this? This is crazy. Everybody look at the hat. But there was
To that fantastic moment where Blanchett's walking away and she just turns back and she goes, love the hat.
Love the hat.
in that very idiosyncratic way that, like, that's what, like, sort of got me. Although, Nick, you're right. The little assembly line handing out of the hats was so sort of funny and quirky to me, and it really sort of like, and it grabs your attention in that way, and it makes you sort of notice a lot of the other things about it.
Yeah,
about that
right,
scene
it
and
feels
about what
so
it's doing.
Real.
Yeah.
It feels like something that would actually happen in real life.
And I was very concerned that I had been sort of oversold on this movie, and I was really like, how is it possible?
Who would have oversold you in this movie?
I can't imagine. Even with like the best of intentions, like I think Nick, you were trying to be as, you know, sort of circumspect as possible and whatever, but like there was just this, every time I would hear about Carol, I would hear about, you know, just how, you know, fantastic and over the top wonderful and A++++. And I was just like, there's absolutely, I could like this movie quite a bit. I can't imagine I'm ever going to love it the way I would have been able to love it if I had gone in completely like devoid of expectation.
Yeah.
Which isn't just from other people, which is just from, you know, knowing it's a Todd Haynes movie and knowing that it's, you know, whatever. But like, way more than I thought possible is how much I loved this movie. And by the time it's that like last 45 minutes or whatever, and Carter Burwell starts tapping me on the back of the shoulder and being like, I like The Hours as much as you like The Hours. Like, it was like that point, it was just sort of like hugging me. Like, the movie was sort of like taking me in and just being like, no, no, you're right. You've made all the right choices in your life. And it was great. It was just so great. I absolutely loved it.
So what we're telling people is that what they'll get from Carol is intense personal affirmation, right?
Right.
Again,
yeah. Not to oversell it.
Yeah. Well, I just, like, there was another moment like that for me that just, like, filled my heart to bursting when Abby and Carol walked down the stairs together, when the shits totally hit the fan and they, like, link arms around their back. Like, I thought that is the most beautiful image I've ever seen of, like, gay friendship. Because it was so, like, because it gets at sort of like what people perceive as like the physicality of it, that it's different than, you know, the homosocial aspects. Like, I just, it was so beautiful, but there was nothing about it that was like, ooh, they're lesbians. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just so like life affirming.
And because it sets itself up at times as this kind of coming of age, sort of like flowering of the young lesbian kind of movie that is going to have the Carol character as this sort of like ethereal, exoticized, like oracle of wisdom, and sort of she's going to be the one to teach Rooney some things and to sort of like bring her along to this next phase of her life. But it keeps subverting that at all turns by making Carol so much both less and more of what you think she's going to be. And by the time you get to that deposition scene at the end where she's just, you know, like, we're not those people. And the way she delivered, like, the way Blanchett delivers that is just phenomenal. But also just the way that the story had built to that and just been like, this woman, I mean, just from calling the movie Carol, you feel like Carol is going to be way more of an object than she is. And she is object in many ways, but like the movie just keeps like pulling you back into the fact that, you know, this woman too has, you know, as much if not more at stake here.
But Katie, we haven't even let you say, do you love this as much? Or
I think it's the deposition scene is when Carol and I finally got on the same page. So I need you guys to talk me through this. Because I like the movie a lot. I'm not going to gush about it the way that you guys are, just because I felt conflicted about it through so much of it. I thought everything you guys have said is accurate, but the thing that I think kept me at arm's length was that Therese is such a tough, undecipherable character for so much of it. And I think Rooney Mara is really good in it. I think she's doing a lot with her face and showing you her feelings, but she's the kind of movie character who is asked a direct question and then like walks away or doesn't answer a question. And it felt very... Yeah. Like, it felt kind of deliberately obscuring to me. And I think I've seen a couple of other people, like, call this movie chilly. And I think for a romance, that's a really interesting choice. Like, you're kind of watching this romance develop in this very slow, kind of, you know, forcibly stilted way because of the time. But I did feel distance from it in that way. I felt like I wasn't feeling what Therese was feeling. And I don't totally understand why the movie chose to do it that way. I'm curious about what, like, if you guys felt as distant from Therese as I did, or if, like, everything else going on in it made everything so clear that you didn't need more from her.
I will just say, like, I'm not sure if this is answering your question, but the thing that I really loved about Therese is that I think she didn't even, she's presented as someone who doesn't know herself. But I think right away you realize she does know herself. She just hasn't articulated it yet. Because, like, when they're on their first date, and Carol asks her about her boyfriend and about marriage or whatever, and, you know, Therese has that great line that got a laugh from the crowd about, like, I don't even know what I'm going to order for lunch type of thing. Implying that she's, like, a very indecisive person, but she's actually not. Like, if you look at all her actions in the movie, she is, like, full bore making decisions, even if they aren't presented as aggressive.
You know what I'm saying? She's the one who mails Carol the gloves. Yeah, she kind of initiates that first contact.
Yeah, and she says yes to basically everything.
Which is exactly what she says about herself.
Yeah,
later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting because the character's presented in a way that I don't think is actually true about the character, and I thought that's what was interesting about it. Like, I think she does not even realize how self-aware she already is.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was struck by what a smart use of Rooney Mara I thought this was, that the kind of remoteness that she's been showing us ever since she kind of entered the public eye that has been so easy to be frustrated by or impatient with. The idea that we were dealing with somebody who, if they overheard this person that they're quickly becoming infatuated with having an incredibly revealing conversation with her spouse, and you would turn the music up instead of down to make sure you didn't hear it. Like, there were just so many things that character kept choosing to kind of both try to get closer to something, which I guess I should now say something external, but also internal in the way that Nathaniel's saying, but also kind of insist on withdrawing and kind of maintaining a privacy, in a sense, or being really scared to kind of leave this cocoon you sense she's been in for a while. And I just like there wasn't, I mean, Carol is the big exception to this herself, but that there wasn't any particular, like, as much as her boyfriend is like, we should go to Paris or whatever, it's not like they were getting married next week. It's not like there was some thing in her life that was requiring this to be the moment of, like, ride or die, like,
right,
a decision about who you are. It just, watching it happen, even inside that bell jar, was just really fascinating to me.
So you did feel like it was in some kind of, it was distance from you in some way.
I definitely did. But, yeah, I definitely did. But in a way that also, I have to admit, the Haynes movie that I rewatched the least is Far From Heaven. I feel like that was the one that kind of shows you so flagrantly what it's doing on first few pass that I don't feel that curious about it. And, like, the thesis about everybody, you know, look at these rigid, codified modes of behavior. Like, love that movie, but not as interesting to me as this, where you feel like people really are living their daily lives. It's not a film about filmmaking. It is a little remote, but in the way that a remote person is remote, not in the way that, like, a self-conscious movie is remote.
I do feel very curious about Carol, because every time someone talks about it, I think about things that I liked in it, that I liked as it was going on. Like, I thought Kyle Chandler was doing kind of miraculous character work with the Harge, an amazing rich guy name.
What a name, God.
I know. It's so, there's a lot.
I think it's Harge aired.
Yeah.
My God, I have to divorce you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much in it, and, like, I think about the when they go to the cocktail party, and there's the friend of Carol's who's, like, smoking and hiding it from her husband, and what a fascinating character she is. Like, this movie is so rich with people that are populating it. I think I just, as I was watching it, like, the thrust of it and the romance and the, like, where I, what I wanted to be feeling versus what the movie was presenting to me, I think was in conflict. And I think that's something, I mean, and maybe that's just something that you have to know what the movie's intentions are before you can kind of be on its same wavelength.
I also liked the way that the movie presents the taboo of lesbianism. Like, it's very much cohesive within itself, but it's also not entirely what we maybe come to expect from movies set in this time period, where it's not this sort of, like, great unspeakable. People speak of it actually quite often in the movie, but the way it's spoken of and the ways in which they both can and can't get away with being in each other's company in this movie is really interesting. But I'm just thinking of, like, those conversations that Therese has with the Jake Lacy character, where he's just basically like, you've fallen, you know, you have a crush?
He says crush.
He says crush, okay. But it definitely stood out at me, and just in the frankness of the fact that, like, you don't have this sort of tortured thing where he's like, it's almost as if, but that couldn't be possible. How could? And he's just like, you have a crush on this woman. Like, it's plain as the nose on my face. And
I thought that was fascinating, too. Like, and especially because Harge, like, when you find out, which is fairly early in the movie, so I don't feel like it's that much of a spoiler, when you find out that Harge is aware of all this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and just the way he speaks of Sarah Paulson's character, too, where he doesn't, you know, mince words about it, except he's always just sort of, he basically just, I can't remember now her character's name either.
Abby.
And it's like, her name is enough to just, like, to conjure all of it. You know, all he has to do is just, like, what about Abby?
But that he also still really loves Carol and still, like, believes in their marriage. So it's like that, the way that they treat, I think, all of the men in this movie, honestly, and, like, obviously the women are incredible, too, but the way that the men go in uninspected directions almost every time just adds so much depth to it.
Yeah.
Totally.
And Nick, that the thing about the surprising limitations of the closet or lack thereof was a great part of your interview with Haynes too, where he kind of talked about, like, what he learned about what would have been possible and what wouldn't have been back then.
Yeah, the, like, two women having lunch or even moving in together would be way easier than her being like, I think I'll move in with my fiance. Like, so amazing. Yeah. But yeah, all those just modulations of, like, you know, we're all saying, like, what's okay, what's not okay, like, scenes. I mean, when you were saying before, Katie, how I won't remember now how you put it, but about the movie seeming, like, in conflict with what it's asking from, and that made me realize my own bias, that I will, like, sprint to a movie that's
kind of that's working against
putting
you.
Putting me in one set of expectations and then sort of withdrawing them if it seems not just, like, sloppy, right? But, like, that the scene where we're first with Carol and her daughter, and I think she's brushing her daughter's hair, and the daughter's, like, just learning to count. But when we start the scene, we're already at 67. It's like, Jesus Christ, this is boring. Like, you imagine sitting there with 68, 69. It's like, oh my God. And that Carol herself does not seem like a particularly warm maternal presence.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then nonetheless, the movie turns so much on, you know, arguing over this child, which is in a way arguing over all the things they're really arguing about. But I liked the constant sense of expectations being misdirected a little bit.
I think mostly I just wanted to feel like a sense of infatuation and love and like the romance of it from Therese's point of view. And I didn't feel that. And I think that's very deliberate, but I just don't know why.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. I mean, maybe it's that I'm an unashamed actress sexual, but I definitely felt it.
Because you're already obsessed with Cate Blanchett.
I've never been more turned on by Cate Blanchett than this movie. It's like her sex appeal and the eroticism of her character. Like, I was blown away by it.
Well, it's
now I'm thinking back, when was I turned on by Cate Blanchett?
I'm not there, probably. Based on what you were saying before.
I feel like I killed conversation by saying that. I'm sorry.
No, now we're all just imagining.
Having erotic reveries about Cate Blanchett.
We are.
Yeah.
Dancing with her to Bonnie Tyler and Bandits and whatnot.
I'll weigh in after I see Truth. I hear that's a very sexy movie.
She's so amazing in Truth. I can't
She really is.
She's just... It's so funny to see these two performances in the same year because they're both... I could not be more different, and yet they're both so impressive, I feel like, and sort of show her off the sort of the breadth of her talent. And the ways she can sort of present herself, it's pretty cool. I like that.
It's funny that, like, you know, they held Carol for a little while, distance it from Blue Jasmine for awards consideration, and then it's just like, no, Kate's just gonna be Kate. She's gonna turn in another amazing performance.
Yeah. Like, so she's not gonna wait for you. Like, okay, she's just gonna keep going.
Sorry, Harvey.
Well, yeah, the extra funny thing about that is that the Truth character is so much has so many more easy references to Blue Jasmine than Carol does.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Is it worth it to even complain about Rooney Mara as supporting actress or what?
I mean, I know we're going to talk about it at some point, so we may as well do it now.
I just don't like to think about it because I want to only feel love for this movie.
Well, and I just feel like there's not even, like, I don't even know what the discussion is. It's ridiculous. There's no, you know, I don't think there's a second way about it.
Do you think this can be a reader situation where the voters are like, no, sorry, she's lead?
Maybe?
I don't think so, because when there's two leads of the same gender, they almost always go, okay, they're supporting.
Yeah.
It's really crazy. I mean, if they were doing Kate Blanchett as supporting, would you be more okay with it?
No, either one of them is disgusting. It's like...
Is it a front to humanity?
Just when you think it's like Teresa's story, for example, then you realize it's Carol's story, and vice versa. Yeah. Like, they are so linked. Like, even though it's like two generations and they have different sets of social circles, and like, they're both constantly driving the story.
This is a slight detour, but I saw Brooklyn, which Nathaniel, you were talking about a while ago, and being like, Julie Walters, supporting actress. Like, and I saw that. I was like, oh yeah, that's what a supporting actress performance is supposed to be. Like, you have a couple of killer scenes and you help move the story along and then you get out of there. I also loved Brooklyn, but that was just a funny comparison to the complete lack of supporting play. I mean, Sarah Paulson's a supporting character in Carol.
Yeah, she is.
Mm-hmm. That's about it. She's also great.
She's great.
And
I really liked her a lot.
It's like, when I was writing about this movie the other day, I'd trying to list the things I loved about it from a first watch. When I was thinking about like Sarah Paulson and Kyle Chandler, I was realizing that they have the only scene that does not involve Carol and Therese.
Yeah.
And such a good scene.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Such a good
scene. I laughed at one point, I think, when he shows up to her house and she's like, I live in a fort. Just try getting it.
I
heard it on my
shit. I wish you would.
This front door is a foot thick. Bye. But then you still felt all of his danger, but then you'd cut back to her, and instead of being scared of his danger, she was like bringing her own level of resolve. It was just fantastic.
And you sense like this super complicated history between those two characters, even though the movie is not focused on those two characters.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you and, know like, that they've had
I
arguments.
Knew nothing
like this
about
before.
This plot trajectory. I was like, is he? This is where he kills her, or this? Like, that could have gone anywhere.
You know what it reminded me of was Pryor and Belize and Lewis and Angels in America, a little bit, where I kept waiting for Sarah Paulson to be like, "I have a man uptown, and I have since long before I set out in my eyes on the sorry ass side of you." Like, it was that kind of thing. It's just like, you don't need to worry about me. You need to worry about what you need to worry about, dummy. Like, that was really fun. I liked that.
Yeah, that was such a good scene.
Yeah, and I think props to Jake Lacy, too. I really liked him in this as well. He's doing well for himself as, like, the very sweet boyfriend.
Well,
he's an obvious child.
He's that guy who tells so much story before he even starts talking, just from, like, the image that he projects, where it's just like, I know so much about you and you haven't even moved. Like,
yeah.
And I can't remember, I don't have my notes in front of me, but when they are walking and she's kind of making clear that she will not be going to France, I think it's the same conversation when the crush comes up. But at one point she finally screams at him, and it's the only time we see Therese do anything like that. And he is utterly unmoved. Like, his vocal register just stays exactly where it was.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm just pointing out that we should go to Paris. Like, his total just, like, he doesn't sort of play a jerk.
And
but
he's not wrong. Like, he was expecting to take this trip, and then she just bounced on him. Like,
yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, the fact
well,
that
see,
his
that, yeah, that's what yeah, that's what's so rich about it, because even though, like, you know, in lesser hands, like, a gay filmmaker would be, like, promoting everything would be about Carol and Therese falling in love, but you get a real sense of, like, the fallout emotionally from romantic attachments that is not good or bad. It's just how love actually is and how messy people's lives actually become.
And yet
without judging anyone.
Yeah.
And they should have called it Love Actually.
But even within those parameters, it doesn't lean on the kid either, which I also appreciated, because that feels like easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels harder to have to make you sort of get into the heads of Kyle Chandler and Jake Lacy's characters.
Yeah. I mean, and it's got, like, the patriarchy, like, why it is hard for women to do this without having, like, a sneering patriarchy villain. Like, neither of these guys particularly thinks that they should own their wives or their girlfriends, but, like, kind of have that sense anyway that's been given to them by the culture.
Yes. Which I think is what's so great about Jake Lacy not. Because I think he's also just, like, confused it isn't just handed to him the way he's, like, expected.
Well, he's done everything right. Like, he's been dating this girl, and he's been very respectful and, like, not been pressuring her too much. And then all of a sudden, she's just gone. All right, well, when I do a second viewing of Carol and then come back and tell you guys you were all right and it's the best movie you've ever seen, you can give yourselves credit.
There's no time to see anything a second time, Katie. We are barreling towards the end of the year. There are... new movies that we all have to see opening every single day.
I watched a screener and a half on my Saturday night, so I am I am doing my homework.
You watched what?
I watched a screener and a half. I intend to finish the other. I watched Grandma and I'll See You in My Dreams. I know.
What a double bill.
I know
we should probably wait until Carol's actually out to go into, like, even more detail. But I'm just so excited to talk about it that it's hard for me not to say, but what about this, you guys? What about this?
I think we'll be have to be physically restrained from talking about Carol for the rest of the year, so it's not going to be a problem to revisit this.
Between Oscars and Best Ofs, and there'll be a lot of chances for us to talk about Carol.
It feels like that talking about it has made you better. Like you sound
you do sound healthier.
It's healed you, my gosh.
Not only does this movie give you personal affirmation, it cures the common cold. Well, thanks for listening. Please get stranded on Mars and fall in love with lesbians in New York and get back to us because we'd really like to hear your feelings about these movies.
Carol's
not out.
Yeah, when
you could
Carol
just tell us your feelings about, have you ever fallen in love with a lesbian in the 50s New York?
Or when is your, what is your sexy Cate Blanchett example that so distracted
when
all of us?
Most turned on by Cate Blanchett. Yes.
That's
mine might have been The Good German, but that is so funny.
Wow.
A hopeless place that it's...
That's so funny.
I keep getting stuck on Galadriel and Lord of the Rings, which is not my answer, but...
She does not diminish.
It's true.
Thanks for Katie for kicking us off.
Hey, do what I can.
And Nick, we mentioned your interview briefly. Nick has a... interview with Todd Haynes in the new film Comment.
I think it's the November-December issue. So the tight version in the magazine, and then they're running the full transcript on the website.
Nice.
And so at any moment, this will be available to people then, since it's October. So.
Yes.
So make sure to read that because it is amazing.
Yes.
We have read it.
Enrich your lives.
We got an advanced copy, and it's wonderful. And Joe Reed, who was personally affirmed by a Carol.
Yes. I sure was.
And thanks to everybody for tuning in.
Bye.